We'll head north now to the farthest reaches of California, where many of the men considered to be the most dangerous criminals in the state are held. In the first part of her series of stories exploring California prisons, Nancy drove to Pelican Bay State Prison to see the controversial SHU, or Security Housing Units. These units are the subject of a lawsuit filed by inmates who contend the 1,100 men held there live in isolation chambers, which constitute cruel and unusual conditions. In this story from our archives, we'll join Nancy as she enters Pelican Bay State Prison with Public Information Officer Chris Acosta.
Acosta leads me out the back door of the administration building and into an electrified high-security sally port. The two entrances to the high-voltage cage are operated remotely by a guard watching from a nearby tower, so no one can enter or exit the inmate side of the institution without being visually cleared.
That goes out to the no man's land.
Clear, C-section!
As the gate on the far side pulls back, we step onto an expansive, barren field of gravel. Stretched out before us, a sidewalk leads to a compound of cement-block buildings a few hundred yards away.
That's the SHU.
That's the security housing.
It's so beautiful here.
That's where I prefer to live.
But look at the mountains and the trees and... Can they see outside?
No. If you look here, there's no external windows in the security housing unit. All the natural light that's given to them is through these skylights. You actually can't see it from here.
Boy, it's just so... So if anybody tries to get out, you would see them clearly because it's just
that's
barren.
It's no man's land. That's why there's no shrubbery out here. That's why there's no
trees
out here.
There's nothing.
Mm-hmm. No, because especially at night, all the big lights, trees, shrubs... Features throw long shadows. They're easy to lay down in and obscure yourself. They're hiding spots. A big open expanse like this of no man's land is what you want, so somebody walking across it, you're able to recognize very quickly.
This way?
Yes.
At the end of the long walkway, Acosta pulls open a heavy door and walks down a narrow hallway, which opens up to an octagonal central compound.
Don't expect it.
Moving deeper into the prison's security housing unit, Acosta and I flash our photo ID cards again and again as we pass through one sally port after another.
Is she clear?
Yeah.
We'll
give her a vest.
Okay.
Once we get in here, we'll put give you a vest to wear once we go inside.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Security housing unit. And you've been around alarms before?
Mm-hmm.
All right. If there is an alarm, we'll have you stand against the wall. We will stay with you. There'll be a lot of responding staff, a lot of keys running by. Just stay out of the way and respond to it appropriately.
Stopping at one of the command posts, Acosta collects a dark green puncture-proof security vest.
We're in the security housing unit right now.
And I'm going to have to put a vest on?
Yeah. Yes, you are.
Okay, I'll take this.
He helps me pull the stiff vest over my clothes.
Would you rather put it on underneath?
No,
you.
No, this is fine. This is the way?
Yeah.
This is Seaside. This is 1-6.
I follow Acosta into a long corridor in one of the SHU units. Overhead is a walkway where officers can patrol the area. And as we move down the corridor, there are locked steel doors on either side. About midway, Acosta stops and stands completely still.
There's a lot of men housed down here in SHU, but just take 5 seconds and listen. What do you hear?
A few keys, their steps, a clang.
People think of prison as being a very chaotic, very crazy place. It tends to be pretty calm down here in the security housing unit. It's quiet, it's very controlled, the inmates are very quiet. You know, people always think that's some horrible, torturous environment. Nobody's chained to the walls down here. You can't hear screams echoing off the walls.
With that, he turns and walks through one of the doors that's been left open. We enter the central core of one SHU unit. Fanning out in a circle around the core are 6 SHU pods. Each has its own rusty red security door filled with small holes, and inside each pod is an open space and 8 cells. Each cell has its own perforated door to allow the inmates to get access to air and light and to talk with one another.
People talk about the isolation of SHUs. But when they come out to yard, they're released from their cell. They can walk the tier unescorted. They stop at their neighbor's cells and talk to their neighbors. They come out to shower. They stop at their neighbor's cells. Their neighbors stop at their cells. They talk with each other all day long within their individual housing pods.
While I peer through one steel door into one of the pods, an officer in a uniform approaches. It's Lieutenant Rick Graves. He says for the past 28 years, he's worked in the SHU and has come to respect what it takes for men inside the SHU to survive.
What he's got in his cell and what his routine is every day or each day of the week becomes his entire life. And if you mess with that routine in some way, it can really screw with some people, and they can't handle it.
One break in their daily routine is a visit from a reporter. For some inmates, this is the first time they've seen a member of the press in years. Standing just outside the pod, I move my microphone closer to the door and listen in. The dozen men locked up in their cells are talking about me, who I am, why I'm here, and what I want to know. Acosta waves his hand, motioning for the officer in the control booth above to unlock the pod's steel door. As I step inside, the inmates stop talking. They are looking, listening. Now inside the pod, there's a large open area with 8 cells. 4 of the cells are on the floor where I'm standing. Another 4 are up on the second floor. Looking up, a huge skylight fills the whole area with bright natural light.
So they'll come out here for 1.5 hours a day and get their exercise and then rotate for the next inmate for he have his time to exercise. And 1.5 hours, next person.
At the back of the pod is a door that leads to a recreation yard. The yard is really just a 30-foot square cement box with high gray walls. Above, half of the ceiling is covered in wire, but is open to the sky and rain. The other half of the ceiling is covered in clear plexiglass. Officer Rob Hansen is the floor cop for this SHU unit.
Most of the yard time they spend out here, they'll spend right here in the drain. That's a telephone.
Yeah. That's a telephone.
You can communicate through the piping system from unit to unit to unit, and that's how word spreads between the units. Or through the doors. This one connects to the pod next door.
Lieutenant Graves, the other officer standing in the yard, interrupts. He says not all inmates in the SHU want to communicate surreptitiously through the drain. He says inmates who have left the gang lifestyle and have gone through the prison's debriefing process don't want the option of communicating with active gang members, so they allow the drain to fill with water and don't complain when it does.
This drain here, no one's complained about it being plugged up, but in an active unit, the inmates would never allow that to happen.
An active unit meaning they're not debriefing?
Correct.
Back in 2006, prison authorities decided to try a new tactic that would control the flow of communication in the SHU from gang leaders to their subordinates. Instead of housing gang leaders in pods throughout the SHU, they decided to move all the leaders, what one authority called all the alpha dogs, into one isolated section of the SHU, cutting off communication to their gang members.
It has been extremely effective in reducing criminal activity within the prisons, and it had an immediate effect within the other prisons and on the streets. It's harder for a leader to talk to a leader and get his message out to a soldier to go out and follow through with his directive. So it's like taking the head off the snake. The body doesn't know which way to go.
Since the prison isolated the gang leaders, Graves says there's been a steady uptick in the number of inmates asking to debrief, that is, to leave their gang affiliation.
They write a biography of their entire gang life, everybody they knew, everybody that required them to do something, everything that they did do, where they were at, where they knew them, and it's a full biography of their gang activity.
Is it possible that they can come in and just give a name just to, so they can get out?
It's a real in-depth process. The process is double-checked by our staff here. They tell us if they know anything about the whereabouts of drugs, weapons, their gang activity, hits out on staff or hits out on inmate where they've been ordered to be assaulted, things like that. And we follow up on all that. And once they validify his statements, then they know that he's been forthright completely honest.
Has anybody ever come to you and said, I want to debrief?
Yes. I've had many want to start that process. And I do encourage them when I interview them from time to time about other issues. I tend to bring this up, particularly if they're a very young inmate, for example. I talk to them a little bit about their history and their background, their family, and how old they were when they came to prison, and how long they've been in with the gang. And I try to encourage them to think early on in their life about what to expect later on in life, and ask them to, I just plant seeds in their mind to get them to think about the consequences of where they're headed.
Even so, Graves says, not every inmate who decides to debrief sticks with it.
We have had inmates that say, hey, no, I don't want none of this.
And I want none of this. What do you mean with this?
The debriefing process. Because they lived a life of secrecy for so long, and don't tell or else we'll kill you mentality. Yeah, they get in here and they think there's a bunch of rats in here. I'm not a rat. I don't want to be a rat. But you really can't get into this program without having first told on a bunch of people.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. KLW reporter Nancy Mullane challenged the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation to get press access to the state's most secure prisons. In this story from our archives, we're with her and Public Information Officer Chris Acosta inside of the Security Housing Unit at Pelican Bay.
Leaving the yard and stepping back inside the pod, Acosta leads me to the cell of Ruben Ruiz. He debriefed in 2011. Standing on the other side of his cell door, I squint to make eye contact, choosing one hole to focus my eyes on his eyes. Ruiz is a young-looking man in his mid-30s, with a short buzz cut, chiseled face, and lean body. He's wearing clean white boxer shorts and a white T-shirt. He tells me why he's in prison.
I was a kid. I went to the liquor store to buy some beer. When I was in the liquor store, I thought, we could get away with it and run out, you know. And from that moment on, everything unraveled until to somebody ending up dying behind it.
Back in 1992, at the age of 17, Ruiz was convicted under the felony murder rule and sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. He hopes that by undergoing the debriefing process, eventually prison authorities will transfer him out of the SHU in Pelican Bay to Kern Valley State Prison. That way, he'll be a little closer to the family he now draws pictures of to fill the walls of his cell.
That's my grandmother. Mm. Up in the left-hand corner, it says love.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of cut off a little bit from the...
Does she come and visit?
No, I haven't been able to see her. She has visited one time. This was maybe 4 years ago, or 5 years ago.
Does anybody else visit you?
My parents visit me, my sisters visit me, and my nieces and nephew visit me once or twice a year.
Ruiz says since he was sent to the SHU, he's gotten a business certificate and taken 30 units of college classes. And now, because of a change in the law, he faces the possibility of parole. We leave Ruiz's cell. Acosta says we have to hurry if there's going to be enough time for me to interview another inmate in the SHU. He tells me this will be the first time a reporter has interviewed a SHU inmate in his cell. As we walk, Acosta explains the terms of the interview.
So what we're going to do is we'll get inside the cell, and they'll cuff him up, secure him. We'll put him on a chair, then we'll slide the chair up. Then you can ask him whatever.
Okay, and I'll be inside, and he'll be on the outside.
I'll be in there with you.
All right. And who is this person?
Luca.
First name?
Robert Luca has been in prison since 1990 on a murder conviction. At the time, he was 16 years old.
He's been here for a while.
While I look around Luca's 9-by-12-foot cell, he sits straddling a padded chair just outside his cell door. He watches me study his world. Wires from a set of handmade speakers lead to a prison-approved television. Pencil drawings of a leopard and a woman are taped to the walls. In front of the cement pad he has for a bed, Luca has built a small desk. The legs are made of rolled-up manila envelopes. Others have been taped together to create a thick writing surface. Lucas says he joined a gang when he was just 13. After getting locked up, he says he fell right in with the prison gang culture.
I received 2 terms for participating in gang activity. Assaults, stabbings.
You were involved in that?
I was involved in, yes.
Then in 2011, when he was 37, Luca decided to debrief and leave the gang.
It took me some time because I was so indoctrinated in the ideology of gang culture and life. So there was a lot of thinking behind it, a lot of soul searching, a lot of big questions. What's the purpose of life?
He says for inmates like himself, the goal in the SHU is to keep a sound mind.
You wake up early, you discipline yourself, you study, you read, you draw, you write, you do everything possible that you have access to. And you take day by day. You can't really, it's like kind of, you gotta kind of have like tunnel vision. You can't think about the future too far ahead. You can't think about your past. That might drive you nuts.
If he were still active in the prison gang, Lucas says he wouldn't be allowed to speak with me. Now that he's out of the gang and making decisions on his own as an independent, if incarcerated adult, it's a little unnerving.
Since I debriefed, I'm learning to feel what hope feels like. And it's indescribable, but I'm very grateful to still be alive and still have this opportunity. Before I used to think I was repaying my victim by condemning myself, but all along I can see now I was just making it about me. Me and my pain, me and my guilt, me and my condemnation, me and my pride. I've been able to put that all aside and make it about what it really was about the whole time. It was my penalty for a crime I committed. And that's the way it should have been from the start.
Are you done paying?
No, I'm just barely getting started.
As I leave Luca and begin to make my way out of the SHU, I peer into one of the pods of cells where inmates are held who have not yet debriefed. Large sheets of thick plastic are screwed over the porous cell doors, making any conversation among inmates in this pod nearly impossible. Acosta says these inmates are not available for interviews. What their world in the SHU is like remains a mystery. For Cross Currents, I'm Nancy Mullane.